Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and it's time to talk about your dog's behavior. George Malera, certified professional dog trainer. He's owner of Divine Canine in Madison. He's been training dogs for over 20 years. It's great to have him back today. We'll talk with him about helping your dog with encounters that scare them and prepare them for new situations. We'll also talk about other dog behavior questions as well and take them from you. So I hope you'll join in. Is your dog reacting poorly to other dogs? Is he afraid to be alone? What behaviors are you concerned about? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. George Malera, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Oh, Larry, thanks for having me back. How are you?
I'm doing great, but I know there are some dogs out there that aren't doing as well as they could be doing and need to be maybe desensitized. What's the basic theory behind desensitization?
Desensitization is going to be the word of the day. You know, when we talk about desensitization, there's two parts to it. The first part is doing a desensitization program with dogs that don't have any issues. And we tend to overlook those dogs that just come to us and they're happy-go-lucky. But I do recommend that, you know, with all the COVID puppies that were adopted from spring forward, I don't want the first time they see somebody bundled up like a Wisconsinite to be come November, December. So it's important that we show them these things that they're going to come across little by little and do it in a way that they can feel more comfortable. When we talk about these, so the first part is the idea of desensitizing them, you know, totally prophylactically, just doing it as a way of life to show them and expose them to things that they're going to see in real life. And this can happen from puppyhood, or it can also happen with dogs that are a little bit older. The second part of desensitization, that's the more difficult part, is when you have a dog that already has showing signs of fear or anxiety around specific stimulus or specific things around in their environment. So if we talk about the first one, this is the one where you have a happy-go-lucky dog. My dog, Dolly, for example, she came to me happy-go-lucky, not a care in the world. But I still exposed her to things. And if I ever noticed her on a walk, sort of get a little bit scared. I remember around Halloween, she saw a scarecrow and a couple skeletons in a neighbor's yard. And she was a little bit hesitant and looking at it. And what I did to help her feel better was I paired that experience with some really yummy treats. So if I get happy and excited and around these scary things, she's going to look to me as a way to sort of get a feel for whether or not she should continue to be scared. And I just threw a big party and gave her some cheese and some chicken. And so now she can walk around during Halloween time and not be scared of all the little ghosts and ghouls that are in people's yards.
Wow.
And the second one here is when the dog already has fear. And I really try to help people better understand that when a dog already has a fear of something, we want to have we want to take into perspective and have the compassion of what we would like done to us if we had a fear. So let's say, Larry, you have a fear of spiders. And I say, oh, but it's a little spider, and I bring it very close to you. You would say, no, thank you. Just keep that thing away from me. As opposed to keeping it at a distance and maybe giving you $20 bills while it's at a distance. You'd start to feel better over time.
Yeah, I'd keep that scare of spiders for a while if you kept handling out the $20 bills.
Exactly right.
Oh, my gosh. So those are a couple of techniques. We've got callers online with questions for you that relate to what we're talking about here. So let's take a call. Carol and Trigo, we'll go to you first. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Larry and George. It's really great to talk to you today. I have a 3-year-old female golden retriever, and she's just a lovable, wonderful dog, except she has to be with me all the time. And when I sit down, she wants to paw at me for attention, or she wants to nuzzle under my elbow so that I pet her. And I don't mind the nuzzling so much, but the clawing hurts. And I'm wondering if you have a super good way to have her stop this.
There's two parts here. If she's showing these signs, and again, this is only the information I'm gathering over a quick call, but if she's showing signs of being a little bit clingy and needing to be, you know, really close to you all the time, that can be viewed as very, very mild separation anxiety, especially if she's like your shadow. So one of the things that I recommend is teaching an alternative behavior. So teaching her how to be on a dog bed. So you can teach her to stay on a dog bed or inviting her up. But the moment she claws you, there has to be some sort of consequence. Now, the consequences or punishments that I like to use are very, very humane. So in those moments where she starts to claw at you and just get very obsessive about it, you can just stand up and walk away.
Okay, well, I do turn away from her because I don't want her to think I'm going to pet her when she does that.
Correct.
That would be her reward, and I don't want to reward her for that.
Now, the important part to remember here, too, is that once you get up and walk away, I only want you to do that for a few minutes, and then I want you to come back and sit down. If she lays down or puts her head on your lap or just leans up against you, you have to decide what is appropriate and what you will reward with petting and love and affection. If she starts to claw, you get up and walk away. Now, she's 3 years... Sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, she's 3 years old. So if she's been practicing this for a while, you might see her do the behavior a little bit more excessively while you sort of quit cold turkey, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh, I do. But she just can't seem to help herself. She just, because it doesn't matter what I've tried so far. But I will try that, getting up and walking away and then coming back in a few minutes and seeing how things go. But she's pretty incessant about it.
Well, you have to be incessant too then,
exactly.
Carol.
Yeah, you have to be consistent and follow through and never touch her when she claws at you.
No, I don't.
No. Well, good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Carol. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a dog behavior question. I hope you will. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Mary in Cedarburg, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, my son got a rescue dog in January, and when he visits, it's a blue heeler, about 1 year old, and he is working from home. The dog is very protective and can become aggressive. Like if we're sitting around the table and I get up, all of a sudden the dog just lunges and growls and becomes aggressive. I don't know what he's trying to figure out what he can do. He's giving him a consequence, and also when he is good, giving him those treats. But what else could he do?
So this is a perfect example of where I would use a form of desensitization. Now, if you look at blue heelers, right, what is their job? Their job is to manage space and distance, but they manage distance between cattle and where the cattle move. So they're a very, very tenacious breed that has a lot of drive. And when we bring them into our homes, if we don't give them enough jobs and responsibilities and training, they sort of take the reins and they go, when people get up off the couch or move around the house, they say, I didn't authorize this movement. Who said you could walk around? So they're trying to manage the space. Now, to help this dog feel a little bit better, what I recommend is if somebody's sitting on the couch or about to walk across the room, you have some yummy treats with you, and not any kibble or anything very basic. We want something yummy that this dog won't turn their nose up at. And as you're walking through the room, you can just toss treats. Or when you stand up, you toss some treats and then sit back down. Teaching them that when this movement occurs, good things happen. And it's very easy to fall into the trap of punishing him for that behavior. But he's doing what he was bred to do, is manage space. I'm not saying that his behavior is okay, but But what we want to change is how he feels about people moving around the house, not punish him in those moments. Because from his perspective, when somebody gets up and moves and then he gets upset and then, you know, somebody reprimands him or says, hey, hey, stop it, knock it off, he's going to go, well, I mean, I just didn't want people walking around. And you seem to get very upset, too, when they walk around. So there can be this culture clash when we're trying to communicate to our dogs, which is why using positive reinforcement and giving food in those moments when there's movement can be really beneficial, so that when you get up to walk around, the dog is going to look at you and go, oh, my God, they're moving. That means they're going to throw some food. This is exciting time.
Mary, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Well, let's take another call. Cindy in Antioch, Illinois. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. I have a one-and-a-half-year-old lab that I adopted. We're his fifth home in 1 year, so he's been around. He's very aggressive towards other dogs, lunges, barks, pulls at the leash. I can barely control him. He weighs about 70 pounds, and I'm looking for a solution to desensitize him towards other dogs.
So we and this is very similar to the answer I just gave Mary. It's about changing perspective. When we have a dog that's reactive, you said he's a year old, you said?
Year and a half.
And does he have any dog friends, or does he get to visit the dog parks?
No, not at all. He's too aggressive for that.
Okay. So this is very, very similar situation, except what we do as humans is, as we're walking down the street, my reactive dog sees another dog and starts to bark and lunge. And then we want to correct that behavior, so we correct what's in front of us. And we say, hey, no, stop it, knock it off, knucklehead. And we yell at the dog, and the dog says, whoa, my human gets really upset when there's other dogs around. So we have to change the perspective for the dog. And this is where people look at me like I have 12 heads. I say, you're going to feed your dog when he sees other dogs. The moment he sees them. So you're walking down the street, and obviously this is the very short and condensed Cliff Notes version of what the process is. But the idea is, you're walking down the street and your dog sees another dog coming down the block. And then that's exactly when you would say, oh, do you see the puppy? Oh, my God. Cheese, turkey, roast beef, hot dogs. It wouldn't take long for your dog to go, you know, it's funny. Every time we see a dog, my human gets really generous with the food. So he's going to start to change when he sees a dog. He's not going to view, oh, my God, I don't like that dog. He's going to go, dog equals yummy treats. My human loves seeing other dogs.
I'll give that a try. I have some chicken skin, and he loves that.
Be careful with the chicken skin. It can be very fatty and cause pancreatitis. You don't want to upset his tummy. But you can use, like, boiled chicken or, you know, a variety of other yummy treats. And one other thing I'd love to mention, if you contact me off my website, I do have a seminar that I hosted. That I recorded on Zoom that I think might be very beneficial for you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
And what's your website, George?
Oh, you can find me at www.divine, D-I-V-I-N-E, the letter K, dash, the number 9.com.
DivineK9.com. Oh, there's a dash in there.
There is.
Yeah, DivineK-9.com. All right, we've got it.
Thanks for calling, Cindy.
Yeah, thanks a lot. George Malara, our guest today. Certified professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Lee Rayburn's our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your dog's behavior today with George Malara, certified professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Lots of callers online, so I think we'll go back to the phones. Bill in Superior, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I've got one behavioral issue. I've got a Great Pyrenees pup that we just got for a livestock guardian dog. I'd say the only behavioral issue we have with him is, you know, normal puppy stuff. When he gets scolded for doing something, grabbing a shoe, whatnot, he runs away. But my actual question is, everybody that we've talked to or everything that we've read about training for livestock guardian dogs, you know, one person will say never bring the dog in the house. The next person says start them off in the house and then bring them out. Another person says keep them with the animals the whole time. It's a lot of contradicting training advice or techniques. I was just kind of wondering what your thoughts were on that. And I saw our pup is roughly 12 to 14 weeks old.
I'm sorry, say that again, Bill.
Our pup is roughly 12 to 14 weeks old.
Yeah. Oh. You know, I have the pleasure and honor of working with Occupaws dogs, and these are seeing eye dogs that hopefully will get to harness work. And one of the things that these dogs are able to do, breed-specific behaviors that they learn, breed-specific stuff that they do and we're able to teach them, is really fascinating. And it's called intelligent disobedience, where they're able to learn that if the handler gives them a cue, to negate that cue if the environment is giving them another cue. For example, if a truck is backed up and blocking the sidewalk, and the handler says, go forward, and the dog says, can't go forward, you're going to get hurt, I can't let you do that. The handler then relinquishes control to the dog so the dog can navigate safely. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because dogs, especially dogs that have very innate breed-specific characteristics, like a Great Pyrenees, I personally don't think it would matter if you have them with the livestock and then within the home. I think that they know what their job is. I think it's so innate and ingrained in them that if you just follow the protocol for training for livestock guarding, I think that it's going to happen naturally. The biggest thing you can do, and in talking about rewarding good behavior, so, like, you know, he's still your pup is still young, and it's going to be young for longer because it's a large breed dog. But one thing that I recommend when you have a young dog is reward what is yes. And this is something that goes missing. And this is how you can have that versatility of a working dog as well as a beloved pet. The idea is catch your dog being good. So when your pup walks past the shoes and lays in his dog bed and chews on an appropriate dog toy, give him a treat. Tell him he did a good job. Because most of the time, we don't reward behavior that happens that we like. We just expect it. And what we want to make sure that we do is we reward what is yes, not just punish what is no.
That is very good advice. And I was thinking about my old friend and companion, Patricia McConnell, who had a Great Pyrenees dog to guard the... to guard the sheep, and that Great Pyrenees would be in the house and be a fine pet. But then when it was outside, it was a great protector of the sheep.
I think they absolutely know when to punch a clock. I think they know when they're on duty and know when they're off duty.
Bill, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Dawn in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Larry. Another great show. About 4 months ago, I adopted an 8-year-old rescue dog. Came from a puppy mill situation, and he's a Pomeranian Sheltie cross. He's a great dog, very sweet, very gentle, doesn't seem to be afraid of anything. The only thing is he does not want to be touched. He is afraid, you know, to have anyone touch, especially his body. I've gotten to where I can kind of pet his head, but I'm just wondering if you have any tips for me.
Yeah, and really, bless you for adopting a dog from those situations. Those are very, very difficult dogs, and they're in horrible, horrible situations and treated poorly. And a lot of that handling is not because he was physically abused. A lot of that can come from just neglect to be touched. So he was never touched to begin with. It's really heartbreaking. Thank you for adopting him. But the way I handle touching is, again, taking your time. When did you say you adopted him?
About 4 months ago.
Yeah, and this is going to be one of those slow and steady wins the race. So one of the things that I do, if he's allowing for head touching, is pair it with any tasty treat. So I would say, you know, pet him on the head once and then give him a tasty treat. I teach something called the gotcha game, where you say, gotcha foot, and you grab you gently take his foot and then give him a tasty morsel. And that could be your training session for that hour. You know, just doing one little touch. Every time that he learns that every time that mom touches me, I get a yummy treat every time I get touched on the head or whatever. My concern with a Pomeranian mix is that grooming is going to be a necessity, and it's almost like a race against time. Like, I got to get you groomed, and then that's not going to be a pretty picture. But you can really jumpstart this by doing these handling games. Sorry?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I did have a groomer come, and she said he was wonderful. He was actually perfect through the grooming.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, there's also the idea of, you know, a dog shutting down and sort of saying, like, I'll accept my fate as it is. But handling at home is something that you can do. Say, gotcha, and just insert body parts. Say, gotcha ear, gently touch the ear, and then feed. And you can also build duration where you say, gotcha foot, and you hold his foot, and you feed while you're holding his foot, and then you release the foot and stop feeding. And dogs will start to say, hey, don't you want to grab my foot some more? Don't you want to grab my ear? And they'll start to feel better about it. But I would work in really, really small sessions because, you know, he's going to be with you for a while, and just work in small sessions and build up to it. And you should start seeing him feel better about being touched and handled over time. But take your time with this. This is a tough one.
Don, good luck.
All right.
Good luck, Don.
Thank you
so much.
Appreciate it very much. Melissa emailed, she is dog sitting, and one of them loves to bark, one of the dogs. The owners let them bark, but she wants to stop it and wonders what's the best way to handle this.
You know, Larry, when people ask me about barking, it's almost like an actor that where the director says, I need you to cry for this scene. And then the actor says, well, what's my motivation? You know, did I lose a parent or a loved one? Did I stub my toe? Like, what's my motivation to cry? And barking is very similar because dogs bark at a lot of different things. It could be a bark where there's a perimeter breach and the UPS man is coming. And then the UPS man walks up to the dog, the dog's barking, and then the man walks back to his diesel truck and drives off, and the dog says, and stay out, right? He's also being rewarded for barking. And then there's barking for attention, right? The Labrador that's trying to put the ball in your lap and barking because he wants you to throw the ball. So there's a lot of different reasons dogs bark. And the first thing I would say is figuring out what's causing the dog to bark. From there, I would decide on what sort of treatment to use. So for perimeter barking, when a dog hears a sound outside or they think that there's somebody in the vicinity, I like to use the thank you cue, where I'll say, thank you. And then if the dog continues to bark, I gently take them by the collar and I'll excuse them from the room. I'll put them in the bathroom for a little time out, maybe a minute or two, and then let them back out. The next time I say thank you, if they're quiet, even for a nanosecond, I say, yes, good dog. And I give them a couple of treats, letting them know that being quiet is what I want. And then each time I say thank you, I ask them for little longer periods of quiet. And then, so that's one reason dogs bark. Another reason dogs bark is that they want attention. And what people tend to do is they put their hands on their hips and say, why are you barking at me? Stop barking at me. And the dog's like, I got my attention. Now pet me or throw the ball or give me a treat. So when a dog is pining for attention and barking at somebody, I just cut attention off. I just sort of say, what dog? I just walk away. And the dog learns really quickly to stop barking because they're not getting what they want. The last thing I really love doing, I stole this one from an amazing trainer named Trish King. She calls it the stupid parent, where dog barks at me for attention. You say, oh, you want to go outside? And you put the leash on like you're going to go out, and you walk the dog through a door, and you shut the door on the leash. And then this way the dog's out there going, I don't think she understood what I meant. I think I should watch what I say because she really misunderstands me quite often. So over time, the dog starts to not bark because they don't want to be misunderstood. And then the barking can subside there, too.
Lots of good ways there. Thank you very much for that question, Melissa. Appreciate it. Carol in Crandon, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Carol. Thank you for calling.
I have two questions. I have a 7.5-year-old black lab mix. And there are two things I'm concerned about. One, when there is thunder and lightning, you know, he's very frightened. And I will often, it's when I'm trying to sleep, and sometimes I will just say some consoling words to him from the bedroom, and that calms him down a little. And if it's more than that, I will get up. He's in his crate at night, and when I'm gone, and, you know, he'll be having rapid, you know, breathing, and you know, I'll pet him a little bit, and that helps somewhat. And then also, I have a cat, and I put the dog out on a long lead on the front porch so I can attend to the cat's special needs. And then I'll bring the dog in and feed him twice a day in the entranceway. And when I want him to go in the crate for any reason, I'll just put a little dog biscuit in there, you know, before I bring him in. And he has a tendency to jump at my outer door. And I will say to him, no jump, you know, sit. And he'll do that briefly. But then he'll quickly start jumping again. So I wonder how to handle that. I've tried a little spray bottle water, and that's a little bit effective. But I wonder if there's something else I can do.
So in answering your first question quickly, I want you to feel reassured. A lot of people will say don't coddle or, you know, love on or pet a dog that's anxious or fearful for, because then you'll be reinforcing the fear. And the reason that can't happen is because you can't reinforce an emotion. Mm-hmm. So in those moments where there's a thunderstorm brewing, what you can do is prepare for that in, you know, making sure all the windows are shut and maybe putting on a nice loud TV show, just sort of drown out the outside sound. I have had some success with using a dryer sheet. A lot of times they can feel the sort of like the pressure drop and the, you know, the barometric pressure drop, and wiping them with a dryer sheet can help just sort of alleviate some of the static that happens around the storm that might affect them. But the main thing is you gush on that dog and you pet him and you love on him, because it's super critical for him to feel reassured. And that's why we have our dogs, is to help them feel safe and help them feel, you know, comforted and nurtured. So don't feel bad about hugging him and offering him food. Now, when it comes to the door and managing him coming into the door, I would practice this not in that moment when you have to bring him in. I would start teaching this behavior before he gets excited, because he sees the ritual. He knows that he's out on the tie-out. And at that point, he knows that the cat's being dealt with and that he's going to get a biscuit for coming in. So it's very ritualistic. So what I would do outside of that moment is just have him outside, put him outside, and then put your hand on the door, wait for him to sit, open the door, and let him in.
Oh.
If he starts jumping at the door, you walk away and leave him there for a little longer. So you're really giving him definitive lines of communication. You're saying, well, when you jump at the door, youngster, I'm not going to let you in. But if you sit quickly, first and foremost, if you sit, I'll open the door and you can come on in. And okay. He'll start to omit the jumping, because the jumping does not get him to where he wants to be.
Uh-huh.
And you want to be careful that you don't do that. So you said something very, very important. You said he sits, but just for a moment. And then you let him in. I deal with this a lot with young dogs that jump up a lot on people, where the dog's jumping, and then the people say, sit, and the dog sits, and then they give him a treat. And if you ask that dog, he's like, do you know how to sit? And the dog says, of course I know how to sit. He goes, first I have to jump and punch you in the stomach, and then I sit, and then I get a cookie. So they put the behaviors together as opposed to having them separate. So when he jumps, you walk away and you don't let him in. But if he sits before, if he sits first, then you can open the door and let him in.
That makes good sense. Well, I think, did we cover everything? I think we did.
I think
Carol,
we did.
Carol, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well,
thank you,
Carol.
Very helpful. Thank you.
My pleasure. Right. Have a beautiful day.
You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Chris emailed, they have a five-year-old purebred yellow lab who got into a ground wasp nest when he was 4 months old. Since then, he's been afraid of any type of flying insect, even falling pine needles. It's to the point where they have to keep him in a screen tent or in the screen porch just so he can relax. Is there anything we can do at this point?
Oh, what a poor buddy. And that is something you call single trial learning, where one experience, just that's it. He is like, he does not trust anything with wings or falling from the sky. And I sort of can't blame him. I mean, a hornet can be really, really tough. I hope he's recovered from that in terms of, you know, no physical damage. But the emotional damage is obviously long-lasting. You know, one thing I would do is I would practice, like, loose leash walking in the yard. Practice loose leash walking in the yard and give him treats anytime they're, you know, it's hard to see a, you know, winged insect. But, you know, anytime that he's walking around, if he looks in the direction of something that's there, I would say, oh, do you see the thing? Good boy. Treat, treat, right? Start helping him feel comfortable and getting him over that hump, and doing this in really short sessions too. You know, when we're dealing with fear or anxiety, working in short sessions is super important, because we're not just teaching basic obedience that we can rush through. We're teaching, we're actually dealing with an emotional status of a dog. And in those moments, like if you're just walking around the yard and, you know, he's eating treats and he's doing okay, keep those sessions short. Right when you think like, oh, you know, I should probably stop. You should have stopped 5 minutes ago. Get him back inside, get him to a place of calm. And you can always go back outside a little bit later and practice some more. And the other big thing that I'll mention, especially when we're talking about dogs with fear or anxiety, is something called a consent test when it comes to, or food refusal, where you're walking around the yard and he's eating some treats, but then at some point he stops eating food and you're offering him yummy stuff, chicken, cheese, turkey, roast beef, hot dogs. And at that point he's refusing food. And it's a Labrador, right? Those dogs are bottomless. So if he's refusing food, it's telling you something about his emotional status and well-being. He's saying, I can't eat right now. I'm freaking out. I'm really having a really tough time. And in those moments, it's really telling it really gives us information about where the dog is mentally and emotionally, and where we can back away from putting him in such a stimulating environment so that they can feel better. That's why working in short little bursts is really important to help them sort of succeed. But I would start with short little walks in the yard. Maybe, you know, just have, you know, if he has any basic obedience and manners, running through the real basic stuff in the yard, giving him some treats, and then going back inside and working this slowly, you know, working it slowly and little by little.
Good tips. Jill in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Larry. Hi, George.
Hi, Jill.
We adopted a beautiful, sweet, 3.5-year-old woolly coated Siberian. And he came with some separation anxiety, which we've worked through, and he's pretty good about it now, where before he was kind of tearing things up when we'd leave. But now he just talks to me when I get home. But what we've found is that when we walk him at night or during the day or whenever, we walk him a lot, and if he wants to see, other dogs all the time. So it's been hard to keep him back from wanting to lunge to see other dogs. He's so friendly, but he just can't seem to hold himself back. And so that I need some advice on, is how to keep him from, and he's getting better. He's getting better because we've used a lot of treats. But when we get home, if he's had more anxious walk because he hasn't been able to see or be close to the other dogs, he will sometimes run upstairs to my son's bedroom and pee on the bed.
Yeah.
And so now we have to keep all the doors closed, and now we have to put puppy pads on the couch because it's his way of saying, I didn't get what I wanted. So so I'm going to show you. So how do we stop that behavior?
So number one, we're going to talk really quickly about the idea of, so there was a previous caller that talked about her Labrador that was barking, that was an 18-month-old lab that was rehomed 3 times since she's had him. And we talked about feeding food. And, you know, it's the timing of using food, because right now what you're dealing with is he has a low tolerance to frustration. When he sees the dog, he's like, hey, I really want to go play with this dog. And you're like, ah, we're just out for a walk. You can't say hi to every single dog. And, you know, you're parenting him and whatnot. But that frustration lingers. So to stop the peeing, I would work more on what happens outside on the walk. And I'm just going to build on what I said to the previous caller. So number one, you're going to use high-value treats, and you're going to give him treats every time he sees the dog. And that is the key to the big to helping him get over this. As we're walking our dogs that have, you know, a little bit of frustration or reactivity, we have a tendency to do 3 things. And these 3 things, it's not that those 3 things are the wrong thing to do. The timing of it is wrong. So what people tend to do is when they're walking and they see a dog up ahead, they preemptively will wind up on the leash or nervously talk to the dog or use food as a distraction. And like I said, it's not these 3 things are wrong to do. The timing of it is wrong. So what we want to do is we wait until your pup sees the other dog, and then we lavishly praise and feed, so that instead of him becoming reactive and barking and lunging towards to go say hello, then he's going to start to see the dog and look up at you. Now, the key, again, like I said, the key here is waiting until your dog sees the other dog, because then that other dog is causing you to give him the treat. It's not, the treat is happening prior to seeing the other dog. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
And then the follow-up to this is talking really quickly about something called trigger stacking, you know, and if he has this frustration happen, you know, let's say you live in a high traffic dog area and he sees, you know, 5 to 6 dogs on the walk, and then he doesn't get to say hi to all those dogs. And that happens, you know, 7 days a week, 365, and he's just living in this place of frustration. So when he comes home and he has these accidents, it's this idea of like trigger stacking. So he's seeing and he's staying aroused way after he gets home. So I wouldn't put down the wee-wee pads. What I would do is make sure that those doors are shut. And when you get home, I would like take them for a walk in your yard. If you have a side entrance to the backyard, or walk them through the house straight to the backyard so he can eliminate. And then when you come in the house, have like a decompression period. So just keep him on leash and just, he can linger with you, or you sit down on the couch or sit down in your office, wherever you need to be, and just give him time to decompress. And if he sits or lays down at your feet, give him some treats for that behavior. Let him sort of decompress, and then let him off leash to have free roam of the house. Because like you probably suspect, this isn't a house training issue. This is more of a behavioral, like an emotional issue. And helping him decompress can be helpful.
I think that's great advice.
Thank you. That helped.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling, Joe. George Malera, our guest today, certified professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine, located in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at your dog's behavior with George Malera, certified professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. Great to have him with us. Questions, you can email us to ideas@wpr.org or phone in at 800-642-1234. Let's take another call. Lisa in Beaver Dam, it's your turn. Hi, Lisa. We got Lisa there. Not hearing Lisa. Maybe we can come back to Lisa. Vince, let's go to Vince in Madison. Vince, hi.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've got a loaded, I guess, question. I got a lot of going on with my dog. He just turned a year yesterday, and he's a great dog. He's a 1-year-old in a day, yellow lab. And I adopted him from my brother and sister-in-law who have a little kid. And from the start, his name is Bo. He has food aggression. And I knew that adopting him, and it's been 4.5, almost 5 months with him. I've been working hard with him on the food aggression. I sit in the same room next to him and eat when he eats. I've tried taking his food, you know, removing the bowl and putting it back, adding food. I've been bit a couple of times. Well, now I'm finding aggression is coming into different areas of his life. Like if he's sleeping and he wakes up and I pet him, I got nipped on the finger a couple of weeks ago. It's been really good since. I'm still, you know, hesitant with my dog, which isn't a good feeling. He's got an appointment at Lodi Vet Clinic tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. to be neutered. I just wondering if there's anything I can do. Besides, I've given him a lot of love. He's an insecure fella, you know, and my brother claims they got him like that. He's just been kind of goofy like that. And the food aggression came when he was a little pup, like, you know, a month, 2 months old when they got him.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, last thing I want to do is surrender this dog. I love him a lot. And
sure.
I'm just, you know, trying to.
So what do you think, George?
Two big things. Since he's going to be at the vet's office being neutered, and this is, again, this is a long shot, but one thing that I learned early on in my career is to rule out anything medical. And I love that you're getting him neutered. I think that's great. But one thing that you can add to sort of what happens at the vet's office is doing a full blood panel, making sure that there's nothing going on medically outside of anything else. Because sometimes medical issues can masquerade as behavioral issues. In some cases, having low thyroid can present aggression, Addison's or Cushing's disease. So, you know, there's a lot of things that could be wrong with a dog that can cause behavioral issues. So doing a full blood panel can be something that can tell us a little bit more about what's going on with him. Now, if the blood panel comes back totally crystal clear and everything's great, that's wonderful. You have a healthy dog physically, but we're dealing more with emotional training. Now, because this is aggression, I always mention to people, make sure that if there are any kids, like, you know, any kids under the age of, you know, 18 in the house, make sure that they're really clear and understand that, you know, to just keep some distance from Bo if he's eating or if he has a coveted bone or whatever he has, because we don't want anybody getting hurt. I love that you're doing food additions to his bowl. And because this is so involved, there's not so much advice that I can give you over the phone because it's involved and I would need to get a better history. But the one thing I will mention is that we never, ever, ever want to punish a dog when they growl at us over a coveted item. And it comes from a knee-jerk reaction from the human standpoint where, you know, you bring this dog into your home and it's like, I gave you food and a bed and I gave you these toys and this is how you repay me. It's the whole idea of don't bite the hand that feeds you. And we take it very, very personally. But what happens if you punish a dog for growling or staring or air snapping is that you're going to take the warning signs away from the dog. And that's where I tend to get calls like, oh, my dog bit me out of the blue. Dogs don't bite when a growl will do. And a lot of times we end up, you know, I always tell people, I like my smoke detectors with batteries in them. I want the dog to growl. And that's just telling me that the dog is uncomfortable and we can work with that. But once we take away the growl or the ability for the dog to give us signals, it can be a very, very slippery slope because that dog learned that growling isn't good. And then they just switch over to just biting. And then that's, you know, we're not faster than their mouths. They are marine snipers with their mouths. Very, very accurate and potentially hard bites. So that's the one big piece of advice I would give is never, ever punish a growl because we want to make sure that that warning system is there to protect us as well. And it's also, and resource guarding comes from a place of fear. It's a fear-based aggression. It's not him being dominant. It's not him being, and you said it too, that, you know, you can tell that he's an anxious dog. If you'd like, I would be happy to consult with you a little bit further off air if you want to reach out to me. I'd be happy to have a little bit longer of a chat with you.
That would be awesome. I'd really appreciate that. He had a handful of things. He was a very neurotic dog. He compulsively drinks water, which has gotten better. We've had a really good couple of weeks. So You know, hopefully we keep moving forward. And I hate to admit it, but I exactly what you said when I first got him. I was, you know, I thought me showing my dominance on him and, like, grabbing him by him scruff and putting him on the side was the thing to do. And I've since, like, very quickly, since making those mistakes, learned absolutely don't do that. So we're not. But the damage may have already been done, unfortunately. But he's doing a lot better. And now I got him where he eats next to me. He won't eat now unless I sit next to him, which is, we got some different things going on. And I tell him, good boy. I'm trying to turn feeding into a positive experience. Good boy, Bo, good boy. Eat your, as he's sitting there chewing his food, rah, 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 rah. Good boy, Bo. So I'm hoping for the best with him.
Well, that full blood panel, too, if he's drinking excessively, that may be a sign of some kind of issue, George. That's
absolutely right, Larry. The excessive water drinking is also a finger pointing in the medical direction.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get that blood work done tomorrow. My brother, before I adopted him, did have a bunch of tests run on him, reclaimed, but they didn't find anything wrong with him. But we'll find out tomorrow. And, you know, and that's the other thing. I was going to have a good talk with my veterinarian, you know, about, like, I don't want to think about surrendering him yet, because I just feel like I'm the best person to teach him these things. Like, I don't have kids. He's in a safe house. He's got a fenced-in yard, and he's got my other dog, Bernie, who is a Rottweiler Labrador. Just, we all just love him, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you so much, Vince.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Vince.
All right. Bye-bye.
Ann in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I'm calling about a young, possibly 1.5-year-old Wheaton Terrier. A friend has, and he's a jumper and mouther, and his puppy teeth are quite sharp. And we were wondering how we can pet him, try to pet him. Whenever we come toward him, and he searches us out, whenever we come toward him, he starts jumping at us and biting at our hands, and sometimes at our pant legs. And I'm wondering, how can we pet him safely and try to help our neighbor with her, you know, with this behavior?
I have to be honest, for Wheaton Terrier, life is merrier with a Wheaton Terrier. I like Wheaton Terriers because of their little bit of hyperactivity and just how robust their personalities are. I love those dogs. As my guilty pleasure in the dog breed world. But yes, that jumping that they do, it's almost like, you know, whoever made them puts a box of springs in their butt and they're just constantly boing, boing, boing. Now, one thing I'd like to recommend for the mouthiness, and I also want to just reassure you, based on what you just described, it's very par for course for a dog his age. You said he's about a year old?
Somewhere between a year and a half to 2 years.
Okay.
I don't know exactly. I can't remember exactly.
Still par for course for a young Wheaton. They stay young and lively for a very long time. One thing I like to recommend is engaging with him in a room that you can leave. So, like, either there's a baby gate or somewhere where you can leave. And it's the idea of presenting affection. So you walk in and you can pet him. But the moment he jumps and starts to mouth, you leave that room.
We always interact with him. He's not our dog. Is outside, and mm-hmm. he's on a leash or a yard.
Then he can walk. You can walk away from him. And the second thing here, you know, with puppies and young dogs, I see this a lot. I always tell people, don't throw gasoline on the fire. The dog is already excited. They're like, oh my God, it's a human. They're vertical with a pulse. I love them already. And the people walk up and I do it. I'm guilty. I say, oh my God, a puppy. Right. And the puppy's jumping up. And this is one of those behaviors that if it's randomly reinforced, so let's say everybody's following the rules and nobody touches this dog when he's jumping. And then one day he jumps and somebody pets him and then they say, oh, it's okay. I don't mind. Right. That dog mm-hmm. is just like, all my hard work and perseverance has paid off. I found one that touched me. And that dog is going to go, oh, my God. So if I keep trying, that behavior will stay there. So it's really important that everybody follows suit. Now, and what I say about not throwing gas on the fire is when you come in to greet this youngster, is to come in cool, calm, and collected. And you can even wait for a calm signal from him. So if his family has them on leash and you approach, you just stand there, wait for him to sit, and you'll see him sitting and almost vibrating while he's sitting there. You can approach a little bit farther. I wouldn't even say a single word to him, and then maybe just a gentle pet on the head. If he launches after that, create your distance. And it's the idea of becoming old hat as quickly as possible so that he's not chomping at the bit to see you, because Wheatons, like I said, they love anybody vertical with a pulse. They really are sweet to people. They really enjoy people. There's a game I like to play called the elevator game. And what I do is I take a treat and I hold it above the dog's head and I lower it. So imagine if there was a string coming out of the dog's head up to the ceiling. You would follow that string straight down. If he jumps up, you pull the treat away for the count of five. That's the punishment. That's the consequence to his jumping. And then once he sits again, then you can start lowering the treat. You're going to see this spot as you're lowering it where he's jumping a lot. You want to raise it up. You want to give him the treat maybe 3 inches prior to that spot where he starts to jump. And you bring the treat in very quickly so he doesn't even have the opportunity to jump. And your goal systematically is to be able to lower the treat further and further each time. And
you know what? We're going to have to continue on this, George. Hang on to that thought. We need to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with George Malera. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your dog's behavior with George Malera, certified professional dog trainer. He's the owner of Divine Canine in Madison. And lots of callers online, but we had Lisa just before our news break. Lisa's neighbor's dog would jump up and jump on her, and you were talking about how to deal with this by setting up a treat situation, George.
Yeah, so there's a game I teach called the elevator game, where we take a treat and we lower it down to the dog's mouth. So the dog is in a sit position, and you're lowering the treat down to their little mouth. And a lot of times dogs will, as I say, engage launch sequence, right? And they jump up for the food. And we want to, so if they jump up for the food, you just remove the food. I like to just sort of like touch my shoulder with it and pull it away. That's the punishment for jumping up. The treat went away. But if you hold your sit and you don't get up and jump, then I'll keep on lowering it down to your mouth. So the dog learns through consequence and reward that they, if they hold their position, now you do want to reward in between, so you're not going to immediately be able to bring the treat all the way to your dog's mouth. In the beginning, you might lower the treat from 2 or 3 feet above the dog's head quickly so that you're rewarding the dog for sitting and holding the sit while we dangle this treat over their head. And little by little, you start to, through lowering the treat little by little and pushing them little by little, you'll be able to get that treat all the way down to their mouth. Now, the one thing I will add to this is arousal training. So what I do with dogs when I'm working with them, especially youngsters, is I like to take young dogs and I work on focus games where they really have to have precision and a lot of thoughtfulness. And then I play tug with them and I start to tug with them. I lather them up and I get them going and really get them excited. And then I go back to focus games because, and essentially what I'm asking the dog at that point is, okay, now that you're nuttier than squirrel poop, can you still think? And I put them in the situation so they're able to show me that I can still think when I'm aroused. And when I work with my beautiful clients, I turn and they ask me, they say, oh my God, George, we love him, but he's crazy. He's like, could you just get him to calm down? And I always ask them, do you want him to calm down or listen no matter what? And that's key to our dogs, because when they're excited is when they're not going to listen. Dogs behave very well in the vacuum of their home, but the moment they get stimulated outside by bunnies or squirrels or people or other dogs, they listen less because they're aroused and they don't know how to cope and manage that arousal.
Really, really good information there. Thank you for that response again, George. Jim in Appleton has something for you, too. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. I have a little cockapoo. He's 3 years old, and he's amazing in every way. And he does everything we need him to do, but he does not come when I call him.
Oh,
he just sits there and stares at me.
So with recall, I do. If you think about our dogs, they get rewarded a lot of times for running away from us. And the idea of, you know, you open your slide, if you have the luxury of a fenced-in yard, you open the slide door so they can run outside. You get to the dog park and you unclip their leash and they take off running. So much outward running happens. But what we really want to start rewarding is for them to come to us. Now, if you think about it, a lot of times ending fun for a dog means they're out in the yard playing, you call them and you have to bring them in the house. And the dog's like, it's beautiful out. Why can't I keep playing? Well, I got to work so I can buy your kibble. So the idea of them coming to you can be viewed and perceived by them as a consequence or a punishment, even if it's inadvertently. So what we want to do is we want to make sure we're rewarding them when they come to us. So the first thing I would recommend is pick up his food dish and take his food and put it in a treat pouch, in addition to having some higher value treats. And then any moment throughout the day when you're able to call him, what's your dog's name?
Oliver.
Oliver. So you're going to say, Oliver, and Oliver comes running in the house. You're going to grab him by the collar and then give him, you know, 5 to 10 pieces of kibble or, you know, a bunch of treats. And then you're going to practice this everywhere so that you start putting value in that behavior of him coming to you. Now, the one thing I will also mention is that sometimes we beat the heck out of the word come, where we say, Oliver, come, come on, buddy, come, come on, Oliver. And then Oliver's like, I don't know. I don't even know what come means anymore because he's distracted by the environment and everything else that he's doing. So sometimes it's better just to add a new fresh word and making sure that you're building value around that. So like a word like here. So you would say, Oliver, here. And if Oliver comes running, you're going to grab him by the collar and give him a treat. The other game I love to play with dogs, especially in a yard or even in the home, is hide and seek, where Oliver's off doing his own thing, and then you grab some treats and you go hide somewhere. Now, when you hide, you want to hide in an easy spot. And you don't want to hide like Sasquatch, you know, world champion, hide-and-seek champion. You want to hide like right behind, over a threshold next to your bed. You're going to say, Oliver! Now, this is where we talk about reverse echolocation. So we know echolocation in animals is like dolphins and bats, right? They make a sound and it bounces back. But once you hide and you say, Oliver! You're going to start making a noise, boop, 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 boop. And Oliver's going to use that sound to hone in on where you are. And then when he finds you, you're going to grab him by the collar and give him a bunch of treats. You're going to start to see that Oliver's going to start finding you pretty quickly. So what you start to do is make the noise less. So when you say, Oliver, boop, boop, you make the noise a little less. So he really has to pay attention to where you are and come find you. And by practicing these exercises for those moments where you really need him to come, God forbid you have equipment failure and he gets off leash somewhere where he's not supposed to be off leash, we have that reliable recall there. And also working with frustration. So something else I love to teach dogs is if you have somebody that can give you a hand with this, you hand them the leash and then you play with Oliver while he's on leash. And then you sort of run away, maybe 5-10 feet. And right when you run away, you say his name and the person drops his leash. And then he makes a beeline directly to you. You grab his collar and you give him a bunch of treats. So frustration and a little bit of prey drive can go a long way in terms of teaching a dog to come when called.
Beautiful.
Excellent.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, George, and thank you, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim.
Nina in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Nina.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. We have a senior dog. And we just introduced a puppy to our family. So the puppy loves to play, obviously, but the older dog, not so much. But they're friendly with each other, but the puppy will run at the older dog and just kind of crash into him. And then he'll also nip at his back legs. So I just wanted to know if you have any advice on how to, I guess, curb that behavior and stop the puppy from, you know, crushing into the older dog and nipping his back feet.
Yeah, you know, puppies, for all intents and purposes, puppies are jerks. puppies have zero manners, and they're like, you know, close talkers with too much cologne on, and it can be overwhelming for an older dog to have to tolerate that sort of high energy and in your face experience. So what I remind people is that we are the aides on the playground. We have to make sure that, you know, that your resident dog is treated like royalty, and we want to protect mm-hmm. them from ever having to police the dog. It's not their job. And we are there right. to manage the puppy's energy. So some things that you can do is, you know, set up play dates with the puppy with other dogs that are like-minded and have the same personality and energy level. This way, when you introduce the puppy to your resident dog, or not introduce, but allow them to interact, the puppy's going to come with a little bit less energy. So just sort of burning off some of the energy before you allow him to interact with your resident dog, so that he's not coming on so strong. The other thing I do is making sure that anytime the puppy sort of crashes into your resident dog or, you know, acts in a way that's a little bit obnoxious, you go and you remove that puppy from the situation. Because, again, we don't want to put the responsibility on your resident dog to have to police the puppy. And over time, because we're keeping the resident dog safe by policing the puppy, you'll be able to see the puppy change his manners in terms of being more polite. Now, this is where rewards come in. So any moment where the puppy does show signs of restraint or polite play, you say, good boy, and you give the puppy some treats, and you also slip some treats to your older resident dog, almost to say, like, okay. these treats are for your troubles. I know the puppy's a jerk. And the resident dog's like, yeah, the puppy's a jerk, but you know what? They're pretty nice to me, and they give me treats for tolerating this obnoxious little pup. And really just policing the situation. Like I said, we never want a resident dog to have to correct a puppy. It's yeah. our job to sort of keep the peace and train the puppy to so that the puppy learns how to interact with dogs. But allowing the okay. puppy to play with dogs that are better matched for him is going to be important. But you do the same policing, because all puppies are not rambunctious, and you know, some puppies are a little bit more reserved, and you want to make sure you're matching the puppy with another pup that's going to sort of mirror his play style and be able to manage the pup, because burning off that steam can be very helpful.
There you go,
yeah,
Nina.
That's great advice. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Yeah. Have a beautiful day.
Chris in Partyville. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, great show as usual, Larry, and I would love to have your guest as a regular Saturday morning show, like Calling All Pets used to be.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, well, it would be an improvement to the Saturday morning lineup. But anyway, I have two puppies, a six-month-old Great Dane mix and a 10-month-old Australian Shepherd mix. The Australian Shepherd trained beautifully, rings the bell to go out to the back, and then gives one yip to come back in. The Great Dane puppy is very difficult in the training. Seems to be not understanding the bell training, and then jumps and scratches the back door to get back in, and no amount of verbal correction will arrest that behavior. How do I get her to stop scratching up my back door?
The one thing I want to mention before we talk about how to treat this is to give you a little perspective in terms of physiological development. So you have an Aussie Shepherd, which is an average sized dog. You know, they can get up to about 45 pounds. But they develop mentally and physically a lot quicker than a Great Dane. I always describe Great Danes, or these large breed dogs when they're puppies, as like baby Huey. You know, like physically they look like they're an adult dog. They're big, and we mentally look at them and go, well, why aren't you getting this? Why don't you understand this? And the reason is because mentally they develop a lot slower than an average or smaller dog. So we have to, you're training two different dogs with two different mentalities. So the larger breed dog is the Great Dane mix is definitely going to train up a little bit slower than the Aussie. But you're also dealing with the Aussie, who is not just smart, but intelligent. And those dogs love to learn. They just like you. They want to be in the library, and they want to geek out and learn everything as quickly as possible. And that mental stimulation is so wonderful for them. So I'm glad you're training with them. Now, when we talk about treatment for this, what I would do is I would actually go outside before, just not just walking up to the door. So when it's time to bring the Great Dane in, I would go outside quickly, just get outside as quickly as possible, and then stand with the Dane. If he jumps at the door, you're gently going to take him by the collar and pull him down, and then wait for him to sit. When he sits, you're going to give him a treat and then open the door and allow him in. So we want to build the behavior of when we approach the door for you to sit, and then I allow you in. Because if you open the door, even after jumping, and I can appreciate the size of the dog that's, you know, those paws are gigantic and he's probably scratching up and ruining your woodwork. Getting outside is going to give you that opportunity to pull him off so that he's not damaging the door, but it's also giving him information. You jump up, I pull you off, you don't get anything. You sit, I give you treats, and then you get to go inside. So what we're talking about is value of a behavior. I want you to imagine a dog's brain as having bookshelves, but instead of books, there are these ugly, cheaply made piggy banks, and all the piggy banks have labels on them: sit, down, stay, come, roll over, play dead. And what we want to do is we want to put money or treats in the piggy banks that are favorable and desirable behaviors. So we want to teach what is yes to the Great Dane pup and show him what is yes. In the words of the great Ian Dunbar, there's only one correct way to do the behavior: show them how. The no behavior, right? Saying no, don't do that. And think about the no list, right? Don't poop in my shoes. Don't eat the curtains. Don't pee on the cat. Don't do this. No. But the dog is left with this void of like, well, I know what no is, but I don't know what yes is. So we have to reward yes behaviors. And with young dogs, it's so super important to, that's why I love treat pouches, is because during the day, imagine if I was to come over and we're going to watch some TV, and we kick off our shoes and here come the puppies, and one of the puppies walks past the shoes and he picks up an appropriate dog toy and lays in the dog bed and chews on an appropriate dog toy. Nobody says anything. But if he was to pick up a shoe, that dog's getting chewed out. So it's about catching your dog being good and remembering that sometimes the absence of behavior is exactly the behavior we want. And not looking a gift dog in the mouth. We want to make sure we're rewarding what is yes. As benign as it might seem, we want to catch them being good and rewarding those moments so that the dog says, well, what did I just do? All I was doing was chewing on my bone on my bed. Well, I'm going to do that more often because my human gets very generous with the food when that happens.
Okay, what do I do when I'm inside and the puppy jumps up on the door?
Right, you're gonna go outside as quickly as possible to prevent him from being able to complete the jumping, so that you're not just opening the door and letting him in, because right now he thinks that jumping up on the door is how he gets the door to open. So getting outside and asking him to sit and giving him some treats and giving him that information, he's not gonna do the wrong behavior when he can do the right behavior and receive a reward. So getting outside before he starts to jump up and get aroused at the door for coming in and getting a drink of water or getting some treats is going to be key. So getting outside and getting him into that sit and rewarding him for the sit, so that he knows that when you approach the door, the quicker he sits, the quicker he comes inside.
Ah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for that question. Appreciate it. George, we've had a number of listeners who have asked about how to help their dogs get over fear of loud noises, thunder and fireworks.
You know, at the top of the show, Larry, we talked a little bit about, you know, the two types of desensitization. There's preemptive training to train a dog how to be handled and how to sort of, exposure and socialization. And then we talked about once a dog already has a fear or anxiety around a specific sound or noise or object. And when we talk about sound, so if you have a brand new puppy, one of the things that I love doing, and YouTube is wonderful for this, is you type in the sound that, so say the Macy's Fireworks Parade or whatever, the Macy's Fireworks, and you play that at a low volume while you're doing your basic training. You play that, you play the sounds at a low volume while they're, while the puppies, while the dogs are eating their breakfast or dinner. And then little by little, you start to increase the volume of the sound so that they become desensitized to it. Now, if the dog already has an issue with sounds, it's a little bit more difficult because it sends them into that downward spiral when they just get, you know, they get so scared and they're trembling and they're frightened. And that's where we sort of do preventative work, like closing windows and making sure that, that the house is a little bit better soundproofed. And we coddle them. We sort of reassure them that everything's going to be okay. If they're eating treats, that's wonderful. But the big part is doing the desensitization process. So prior to the 4th of July, prior to Halloween, prior to, you know, winter coming is, you know, crank your AC, put on your winter gear and do some training in your bulky jacket with a scarf on and gloves on. This is how we start to do the desensitization process so that dogs don't see the scary thing for the first time during that season. We're doing it prior so that they can become comfortable, and it gives us insight as to whether or not the dog is actually going to be scared. There's a, my friend who's also a dog trainer does this wonderful class with puppies where, I mean, he puts on what a getup. He puts on like this weird hat and walks with a cane, and he walks around giving these little 8-9 week old puppies treats. And the puppies very quickly learn that when we see people with odd gaits and when we see people dressed up in a peculiar way, that those things are actually nothing to be scared of. If anything, we should like those things because they bring us rewards. And that's the pairing that we want to do. We want to make that association of scary thing, good treats. And very quickly, dogs learn that those scary things are not anything to be scared of, but to actually admire and love.
Oh, that's a great way to end our conversation today, George. It's been a wonderful 90 minutes. I want to thank you so much.
And thank you so much for having me on again. I look forward to the next time, Larry. It's always such a great show.
And give your website again. Would you do that?
Sure. You can find me and reach me at Divine Canine. That's D-I-V-I-N-E, the letter K, dash, the number 9.com.
Divine K dash
number 9.com.
.com. All right. Well, I hope we have a chance to do this again soon, George. Thank you so much
for having me, Larry. Always a great time.
Well, it certainly is. George Malera, our guest today, certified professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. He will be back and he will be with us again. I always look forward to hearing from George. Just to look ahead, tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about how the fishing has been this summer. Have you been catching any fish or wondering where to go to catch them? We'll talk about that at 11 o'clock. Then at 11:45, we'll take a look at what really goes on at a wildlife rehab center. A lot goes on, I can assure you of that. That's at 11:45. In the meantime, I want to thank you so much for listening. Great calls today, as always. And remember, there's a lot more in store here on the Ideas Network right through the afternoon. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mealer.